The next case on our calendar for hearing this morning is the estate of John Kenneth Rutt. Are the attorneys present and ready for argument? Okay. Appellant's counsel should approach the podium and begin, and please state your name before beginning your argument.
My name is Roxanne Carl.
Could you take the podium, please? And there are mechanisms by which you can lower the microphone.
Okay.
I'll give you a second to do that. I think they're at the base of the table. Could the marshal maybe?
You want me to lower
show
the,
her?
The table? Or the?
Are you good with the table at the height it is?
Lower the table and the mic.
Okay.
If you want to lower the table.
My name is Roxanne Carl. Is that good?
That's good.
Okay. And I'm the attorney for the appellant, David J. Rutt.
Okay. Proceed with your argument.
Thank you. May it please the court, today we're here in the matter of Rutt. And this case is pretty simple in the sense that it's on a petition asking the court to go ahead and set an evidentiary hearing and a discovery schedule. And then what basically happened is the other party asked for a motion on the pleadings. And we're contending that the district court judge erred in his findings and conclusions and application of law. That's our position.
All right. How did the court err?
Pardon me?
How did the court err?
Well, they err in the sense that with respect to collateral estoppel, the elements, it's a four-pronged test, and they don't meet element one. So that doesn't allow for collateral estoppel to proceed on that issue. Then with respect to the inherent power of the court, the court is saying that it used its inherent power to go ahead and tell the other party that they don't need to provide the information to the appellant. Now, inherent power, if you look at the cases on it, it's something that the court has that they use more when it's perhaps a formality of the court, how a judge handles a certain calendar.
Counsel?
Or, pardon me?
Counsel? When I read the district court's order, I don't see the words inherent power. Can you point to me where the district court references that?
Okay. So with respect to the second issue.
The second issue?
Pardon me?
The second issue? The failure to provide estate accountings?
Hmm?
Are you referencing the failure to provide estate accountings?
I'm sorry, I can't hear what you're saying.
What do you mean by the second issue?
Oh, the issue that they're saying that giving the financial information.
Which financial information?
The accounting.
The accountings, okay.
Yes.
All right, let's talk about that, actually. So I read the district court's order not as saying that count two is barred by the doctrine of collateral estoppel.
Correct.
But instead saying that I'm going to take everything that's set forth in the petition as true, and because I have the discretion, district court, to determine whether a co-personal representative should be removed based on those allegations, I'm telling you, I'm not going to remove the personal representative based on those allegations, and I have the discretion to do that. So what about the district court's order is an abuse of that discretion?
I don't believe that the court had the authority to do it in the fashion that they did. They said they're taking everything that was in the file and based on that saying, hey, I'm not going to let you have it.
And is there some case law or statute that prohibits the district court from acting in that way?
Actually, I haven't seen any cases that allow a district court to deny giving a devisee information regarding an estate as a basis of that, just say, no, I have authority to do it, so I'm doing it. I don't think that's within the realm of their authority to do that based on the facts in this case. Specifically, they relied upon information from the other party that was false. And in doing so, they said, well, you know, one of the reasons we're not going to do it here is because in the past, the other party has always provided the information to the devisee. So I don't really need to do it. I feel comfortable using my inherent power and saying no. But that was false. They have never provided the tax information that we have asked for.
Can I just ask a couple of questions about the estate itself? I mean, the representations in the file indicate that the only asset of the estate is the judgment against your client. Is that correct?
The only remaining asset. And in addition, there are still some personal property out there that's in trucks somewhere and still not distributed.
Okay. And is there some mystery about what's in the estate?
Mystery?
I mean, we know what's in the estate, right? We know what the value of the judgment is. We know whatever this personal property is.
We do know what those items are, correct.
Okay. So there's nothing that could be disclosed to you that you don't already know. Is that
That's
fair?
Not correct.
Okay.
No.
What is it that hasn't been disclosed, or what is it that has not been disclosed to you? What don't you know right now?
We don't know what income taxes have been paid.
And why is that? Why does that matter? I mean, you know, from what I gather from reading this long history in this file is that there's been a long period of time where taxes have not been paid, and there's been no action taken by the taxing authorities. So why does it even matter if the taxing authorities aren't saying you better pay your taxes on whatever nominal interest may have accrued on this judgment that's not been collected?
The situation is now different. When taxes hadn't been paid, we went in 2018, that court decided that they accepted the affidavit of the other party saying that they recovered assets from the payments that the devisee was paying. So because of that, the court said, there's no taxes owed. And if in the event there happened to be some owed, they'd be responsible for them.
Has the taxing authority said taxes are owed and are unpaid?
Taxes are interest is income, and income.
I want you to listen to my question. Has a taxing authority said to the estate taxes are owed and unpaid?
They have not shared any information to us about the taxes. We don't know. That's why we wanted to have our petition asking for the information, because when the court made its order in 18, they accepted that those were recoveries. Now we have the other party saying, we're receiving interest. We've been receiving interest since 2018. And quite frankly, they probably received interest in that other order under the court, because if you look at what the principal balance was back in 11 and what it is now, it's the same. There's been no reduction in principal like they claimed in that 2018 court affidavit, but the court said it was recovery of assets. But now the other side is saying, oh yeah, we are receiving interest. Well, why aren't you filing tax returns? You have a duty, you're a fiduciary, it's an obligation that you're required to do. That's why we want it. Because we want to close the estate. We want to know what the numbers are. What's the final balance on the balance sheet? How much is owed? If anything.
How is the estate going to be closed when there's an unpaid judgment that's held by your client?
We want to do a settlement. We want to know what the numbers are so we can make a settlement. I know they have told us they won't take anything less than the full amount. Well, we don't think that's a fair option. I mean, the statute requires them to, that they have the ability to compromise. And on the other hand, they're supposed to expeditiously resolve this estate. This has been going, this judgment has existed since 2011. This needs to be done. And that's what we're trying to move for. And these PRs, they're not giving us the information. They're not interested in settling. We think that they need to be renewed so we can find a neutral person representative. Initially, there was a neutral person representative in this case because the siblings don't get along at all. And then when the independent person representative said, I need to get out, the court appointed two siblings as replacement PRs. And now we've had this situation where we have the conflict between the parties. So that's the inherent authority that we're looking at. And in addition to under the probate statute, we like to focus on the probate statute. I don't think the other party is looking that much at the probate statute, because the probate statute compels and tells the court that an interested party can do this. They can bring a petition. And an interested party is a devisee. And they can bring a petition if there's cause to have these people removed. And there is cause if, in fact, the parties are not doing their job, if they're mismanaging the estate, or if it would be more equitable. And that's what we're contending. They're not doing their job. They won't give us basic information so we can confirm that the job has been done properly, the taxes have been paid, and the returns have been filed. And also, so we can have transparency, so we can have a settlement. The last order, 2018, there's been over $78,000 paid to those parties. We need to know where has that been spent, how much is left. Our party is one of the devisees also, so he's entitled to a portion of the assets. So his seventh share, we want to, you know, add that back in to what his obligation is, to what he would owe the court as after you offset that amount. But there's also, that's a statute, but there's also case law that says if the parties have animosity between them, that can be a basis for removal of a PR. And we feel that in our particular case, it looks like there's a little bit of understanding by the district court and the other side. The reason the certain issues were brought up about what's happened in the past, not to relitigate them, but to show the pattern of animosity in this case, to show that it was always, nothing was done to assist the devisee in this matter. It was all, what can we do to get the most we can? And because this particular case was running at a 10% interest rate on the amount he owed, of course, it'd be perfect to keep it open. They got a 10% return during a time when our society, 4%, 2%. So it was it generated quite a sum of money for them concerning the interest rate. We also need to know what else, what additional interest they've returned on this account. Well, they had our money sitting in an account, that $70,000. How much interest did the estate earn on that? Well, it was sitting in an account. We don't know any of those figures either. We're also very concerned that we keep being told that there's a CPA in the picture. We never get the name. We don't have an affidavit. We never get a straight answer from the other side if they filed any tax returns. They're very evasive. They're going through the paperwork. You will not see a statement that says, we filed tax returns. They do say that their CPA tells them when they have enough taxable income that they need to file. We're not talking about taxable income. We're talking about gross income. Gross income. They've never understood that that's the figure that you use to determine whether or not any taxes are owed and whether you need to file taxes. And clearly, by the amounts of money that we have paid every year, the amount paid by my client would result in having to file a fiduciary tax return because it's paid over $600 in a calendar year, each of those calendar years since 2018. We have no tax returns for that. We have no copies of tax returns from the previous tax returns that the court in 2018 ordered them to give to us, the tax returns for 10, 11, and 12. We don't have them either. So that's what we're really looking for, is to get that information. That's why we wanted the petition. Court, please order in discovery that we can get copies of any and all tax returns that these parties have filed. And then we can come up with the additional bills that have been paid. There's all this reference to CPA, but there is no billing that we've seen, any accounting of the attorney's fees, or any on an accounting sheet showing that they paid the CPA any funds. We also want the court to know that we feel that when they relied on U.S. v. Boyle, that doesn't let them pay tax returns late and file them late. That just says you're responsible. If you have an agent and your agent didn't follow through and do the taxes, you're still going to be responsible. They're not going to let you off the hook unless there's some special excuse that could be supported. But otherwise, you need to timely file your tax returns. And that's what they're not doing and haven't been doing. And under U.S. v. Boyle, Justice Berger says, you know, you need to timely file taxes, otherwise our entire system would collapse. And so it's very important. It's not an excuse that they're personally liable, that they can avoid timely paying and filing them. So we're asking the court to accept our request to see that the lower court abuses discretion. Collateral estoppel was not satisfied under the four-prong test, and that it's inherent, it abused its discretion by finding inherent authority as a basis in a case where we're looking for information that under the rules of civil procedure, you can get information from the other party. You don't have to bring a motion for a court order asking for information. And they refused to provide us with the information we asked for, so that's why we filed a petition.
Counsel, on rebuttal?
Pardon me?
On rebuttal argument, could you tell the court which provisions of the probate code would support your assertion that your client is entitled to receive the information he seeks?
Is he entitled to the information?
Yes.
Okay, on my rebuttal?
On your rebuttal.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Who is appearing for the estate?
I am, Your Honor. May it please the court, Patrick B. Steinhoff. I'm representing Carol Bruggeman and Joanne Eggy, who are the co-personal representatives of the estate.
Could I start with a couple of high-level questions?
Go ahead, Your Honor.
Thinking back a lot of years to my days in probate court. Is Mr. Rutt an interested person in this estate?
He is, Your Honor. He's an heir. Judgment debtor, but he's also an heir.
So if he is an interested person, does he have a right to demand an accounting from the personal representatives of the estate?
He has a right to petition the district court for an accounting. That's not what this is about, though, Your Honor.
Okay, well, I thought I just heard arguments about the fact that there hasn't been an accounting. They don't know what the amount of the estate is, whether taxes have been paid.
Yeah, Your Honor, I'd say that most of that is just false. I mean, let me just correct a few factual misstatements. As far as I know, there's never been a time when my client has not paid all his taxes, that they haven't filed tax returns. I'm not a tax lawyer, they're not accountants, but the estate has an accountant. There's estate tax returns, there's income tax returns.
Why isn't any of this turned over? I mean, it seems like all of this could be completely, I mean, we would not be here, it seems like, according to Ms. Carl, if all of this information that you're professing has been accumulated and handled has been turned over to Mr. Rutt.
Your Honor, they don't really care about taxes. The point of this litigation is to litigate.
I understand that.
Okay.
I understand that there is terrible animosity between these siblings, which is extremely unfortunate. It's very clear from this file that these are people who do not get along and will never get along. But it seems like this dispute, that at least is framed by Ms. Carl 3 minutes ago, is we asked for information, we didn't get it, and that's why we're here.
Okay, let's go back to the last appellate argument, Rut 3. That came up to you on an appeal from an order for distribution. As part of that motion to allow a distribution to the heirs, Ms. Carl and her client said at the hearing that we oppose this distribution because we don't think the estate is filing the right tax returns. There was no request for disclosure. There was no request by the judge, no order for disclosure. They just made it up at the hearing, and then they appealed it to you, this court. And now they're doing it again. There was a petition to remove my clients as personal representatives based on nothing. They have no facts that my clients have not filed anything with the IRS. They have no facts that they haven't paid taxes. They haven't asked the judge to...
Can I stop? Because I'm not hearing an answer to the question. I'm sure what I would hear from the other side is they have no facts because you've not given them any information about the financial circumstance of the state. High level again.
Mm-hmm.
Is or is not the purpose of the probate code, the appointment of a personal representative and an involvement of the judge to make sure that interested parties have access to information regarding what's going on with the management of the estate?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Has there been a request?
No. There has not been a request to the court to direct my client to disclose tax or financial information to anybody.
Does the probate code require your clients to file an accounting with the district court, and that accounting then would be available to Mr. Rutt so he could see what's going on in terms of the financial circumstances of the estate?
Yes, Your Honor. As I understand, the probate code, there's been two accountings so far, one in connection with the last appeal. There's supposed to be an accounting at the conclusion of the estate. My client has given accountings whenever directed by the court. As far as I know, that hasn't included disclosure of tax returns, which is not something that I would give to Mr. Rutt or his attorney unless I was ordered to do by the court. But there have been accountings. My client has filed them whenever it has been directed to do so.
And this is going back a long time, doesn't the probate code require annual accountings? I could be wrong, but that's my...
Your Honor, I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not a probate lawyer or a tax lawyer.
I seem to recall when I was a district court judge that I would get stacks of annual accountings that I would have to review in probate court, which suggests to me that this isn't something you don't do until you're ordered to do so by a judge. It's something you're supposed to do on a regular basis so the interested persons know what's going on with the estate. And again, I could be wrong, and maybe I'll hear differently on rebuttal.
I mean, there is a provision in the probate code that allows somebody to petition for an accounting, and I that's not what happened here. There was a petition
for removal.
For removal. And,
understood.
You know, like was noted before, this estate has one asset. It's a judgment against Mr. Rutt for fraudulently taking assets from the decedent. That's been established in prior appeals. The only expenses that the estate has is to pay me to defend things like this and to, you know, garnish and pay accountants and stuff like that. There's no mystery about any of it.
So there are no assets?
There is no asset. The only asset is a judgment. To get Mr. Rutt's asset. And
just to refocus what we're here on, what this appeal is about, it is an appeal from the dismissal of a petition to remove the personal representative.
That is correct, Your Honor.
It's not a denial of a petition for an accounting.
Correct.
It's not a denial of a petition for a discovery. It's a denial of a petition to remove co-personal representatives.
That is correct, Your Honor. That is the only thing that is before the court. It is the district court's dismissal of a petition to remove personal representatives. And getting back to the standard of review, the district court has all sorts of discretion to remove personal representatives, and this was the procedural posture of the district court's decision was a motion for a judgment on the pleadings. So if one were to take everything in the petition as factually true, the district court decided that none of that stuff is legally sufficient for me to remove the two personal representatives as requested by the petitioner. And for the most part, the reasoning behind the district court's decision was every single issue except one that was raised in the petition is an issue that has been adjudicated at least once, with respect to at least one of them, more than once, by the district court and also by this court in one of the prior district court proceedings and one of the three prior appeals to this court. You know, this tax issue was litigated before on a petition to block the distribution of money to the heirs. Again, not a petition for an accounting, not a petition to the district court to order my client to give information. If that's what we were here on, I'm sure, I mean, it might be relevant, the extent to which, you know, information wasn't given. But all of these issues were litigated before. The one issue that wasn't litigated before was an allegation in the petition that the estate's attorney, me, did not disclose information to Mr. Rett's attorney during confidential settlement communications, okay? And I'll just say that I dispute the characterization of that that was given by Ms. Carl, and but it's on the pleading, so let's just assume that we actually said that we won't settle unless it's for every penny. Okay, that's not true, not agreeing that that's true. That's what's in the pleadings. The district court decided that they don't have to settle. They have no requirement to take a lesser amount, you know, for a judgment against Mr. Rett, which is the only asset of the estate. So that's not sufficient enough for me to remove them as personal representatives.
Which is a discretionary decision.
That's a discretionary decision. That's not an abuse of discretion. So that's really, that should be the end of the story. I'm not sure I quite understood Ms. Carl's collateral estoppel argument. She's saying that the first element of collateral estoppel isn't present, which is, as I read the case law, that the issue be the same. So I think all of these issues are the same except for the one I just discussed. I think the only difference in the tax issue is it's a different tax year. And you know, as the district court noted in its opinion, and I noted in my brief, I mean, essentially, I mean, they're saying that we did such a bad job of litigating it the first time that it wasn't a decision on the merits. That was the argument in their brief. Now they're saying it's a different tax year, so we can just do it again and again. I don't think those are persuasive arguments. I think the district court got it right. It's a question for me is whether it's really collateral estoppel or res judicata or law of the case, because I mean, it's been adjudicated by this court and the district court, you know, multiple times in one probate proceeding. But whichever doctrine applies, they are precluded from continually relitigating a made-up issue about taxes. If they want copies of the tax return, file a petition for an accounting with the district court. Like I said, I don't think my client, I would not advise my client to disclose their tax or financial information to Mr. Rett or his attorney, but I would give it to the district court if ordered. Never been a request for that. The only thing that was requested of the district court was to remove my clients and then on up to the Court of Appeals, just like the last time. So I'm happy to answer any further questions you have, Your Honor, but I think this is not a hard case. Lots of discretion by the district court. He didn't have to remove the petitioners. He decided that the pleadings, allegations in the petition weren't legally sufficient, and this court should affirm that.
I don't see any additional questions for you. Thank you.
For your honor, the statute that we were looking at for the question you asked is, I believe it is 5243-1001.
And what does it say?
I have it in a group of three statutes, and my summary from those three statutes say that at a minimum, it includes that the respondents have a duty to keep the estate devisees reasonably informed about the administration of the estate. And it says they need to give them an inventory and a final count, as well as supplemental inventories and accounts to reflect the addition of additional inventory or account items. And
so this statute provides that an interested person may petition for an order for an accounting. But that's not what this petition is. This is a petition to remove personal representatives.
Yes, it's a petition to remove them, and as part of it, asking to set up the discovery, which we will get since we don't have this information now because they refused to give it to us without a court order.
But there, just to be clear, there is no petition, or there was no petition
for an accounting filed with the district court?
You don't, with all due respect, the accounting part is something that they are obligated to do. You don't need to bring a petition to ask
what,
for
what
it.
What statute says they're obligated to do an accounting?
The one that I just read to you.
Could you read us the language that says they're obligated to do an accounting other than the initial accounting and final accounting?
It says as well as supplemental inventories and accounts.
Yeah, but that's on petition. That's pursuant to court order.
Pardon me?
But that's pursuant to a court order, right?
That is with respect to, under the statute, once they file inventories, they have to keep updating them and providing them to the court and the other parties.
But inventories, that sounds like there has to be an updated report if the personal representatives have brought more property into the estate. Is there any suggestion that the bulk of this estate has changed in terms of what property comprises the estate?
No.
Okay, so why would there need to be an updated inventory?
Because they need to know what's going on in the estate. What kind of interest has it generated?
Have you made a motion to compel disclosure of that information pursuant to the statute?
We asked for it in an email to the other party. We asked for it.
Okay.
And
but have you asked the court to give it to you?
We asked for court assistance by allowing our petition for removal of the PRs. That's how we asked for it. And that's the statute for it.
Understood. Thank you.
There's a clarification. There's a difference between what happened in the court in 2018 and what happened in 2022. They're not the same. When it was in 2018, we were asking the court, wanting to make sure that if there were any taxes that were owed, that they were paid prior to the distribution of that asset. And the court said, well, there weren't any because they were recovery of assets. This time, we're not asking about the distribution. We want to, under the new one, there's nothing requiring under the new one that, we need the information so we can remove them. We have a right as an interested person to have that party removed. We've sought that information. We didn't get it. We shouldn't have to formally bring a motion asking to get this information before we can remove those parties. We're a devisee. We're entitled to it. They should provide it to us. And with that, like I said, we can see what's happening and we can propose to them. We want to settle. They said, the court looked at it and said, no, there's nothing in here saying that they have to settle. Yeah, well, the judge didn't look at the next statute. The next statute says these PRs need to expeditiously resolve this estate. They're not doing that because they won't settle without the full amount. There's nothing saying the statute allows them to settle for less, but the district court judge says, oh, no, they don't have to, so I'm not going to make them, so I'm not giving you the information.
Ms. Carl, I just want to note, with respect to your statements about expeditiously resolving this estate, it's a difficult argument for your client to make when he has been the source of the delay year after year after year. So it's just a comment, which I generally don't insert into arguments, but.
Oh, you're coming from over here. I'm sorry, could you state that again? I was looking at her and I.
That's all right. It's really my I'm just reacting to your statement that respondents have failed to expeditiously resolve this estate.
Yes.
Yes. When you look at the series of Court of Appeals decisions, including the one in 2010 that I wrote, it has been Mr. Rutt who has been the delay in getting resolution here. So I just don't think the facts line up with that argument.
Well, okay. I see my time is all good.
Thank you to the
Thank
parties
you
for your
much.
Arguments and for answering our questions this morning and the briefing. The matter is submitted, and you will have our decision within 90 days.
Thank you. Okay, thank you.